Welcome to the First Cars webcast of 2020. I hope your year is off to a good start. My name is Beth Flynn Ferry. I'm the Executive Director of Cars, and today we're excited to be tackling the topic of talent strategy. With me is Brad Bell, who's the Academic Director of Cars, as well as a Professor of HR Studies here in the ILR School. How are you doing, Brad?
I'm good, thanks, Beth.
Excellent. Well, last year, Brad did a couple of working groups on this topic of HR strategy. One was hosted by Microsoft here in the States, and Estee Lauder hosted one for us in London. And so I think we've got a good global perspective on this topic with 16 different companies that attended those two working groups. And so what we're going to do over the next 30 minutes or so is Brad's going to share some of those insights from the working group. We're going to start it off by me asking Brad a few questions, but I'd like you all to be thinking about what are your questions as well, and be submitting those online as we move through the session here. So we'll take the first 15 or 20 minutes where Brad and I will do some questions, and then intersperse yours along the way if I can get the iPad from Dawn, and then leave time at the end for questions as well. So with that, Brad, let me ask you a first question. So a good place to start might be to hear a little bit about why you decided to focus on this topic over the last year.
Sure. So, you know, we've done a number of learning and development, broadly focused working groups, I'd say, over the last 4 or 5 years. We did a few focused on leadership development. We did a few a couple years ago focused around kind of early career development, because that was a growing focus in organizations, thinking not just about kind of their senior leadership talent, but also thinking about how do we really kind of build end-to-end kind of development solutions for our talent. And, you know, what we were hearing across these different working groups was, although these kind of specific programs and practices were changing, there's kind of this broader effort within companies to really kind of step back and think about their talent strategy more broadly. And that was really being driven by the growing disruption that we're seeing due to a variety of factors having to do with technology, as well as various socioeconomic and demographic forces. And many of these we know about, things like on the technology side, AI and automation, big data, processing power, really kind of transforming organizations, transforming jobs, creating a lot of different talent implications, as well as, you know, different demographic forces. Well, whether it's the aging workforce in more developed countries, whether it's kind of the younger demographics of the workforce in many emerging markets, really kind of thinking about some of these generational issues that are leading to different expectations and different talent needs. And so, you know, obviously a lot of these, you know, issues have important talent implications that, again, are really kind of forcing companies to kind of step back and think about, you know, what should our talent strategy look like, you know, going forward. And given that it seemed like we were at this inflection point, it seemed like a good opportunity for Cars to dig in a bit and really kind of probe our partner companies to think about, you know, what is changing in their talent strategy, or where do they see this heading in the future?
Yeah, there is a ton of change going on in that realm for sure. And so in the face of some of those issues that you just mentioned, you know, what are some of the changes companies are making to their talent strategies?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I think those changes are being, you know, driven by, you know, a few key factors. I mean, broadly the ones that we mentioned just a second ago, but you know, a few that really kind of came up quite a bit in our discussions in the working groups. You know, one certainly being around this idea of kind of new competition, really kind of leading companies to adopt new, you know, business models. You know, for example, we heard from, you know, a number of companies, you know, if you're in the, let's say, skincare, makeup, you know, industry, you know, it used to be you had your kind of key competitors, your major competitors, but now what they're finding is that competition is coming from everywhere. You know, someone can start up their own company out of their garage, manufacture and kind of distribute and you know, sell all on their own. And certainly this idea of kind of businesses out of the garage are not new. I mean, we can go back to HP, yeah, Apple, Google, right? But the fact is that they're becoming, you know, more prevalent. They're hitting industries that maybe never had to deal with that type of competition, right, before. And so it's really kind of forcing companies to think about, okay, given this new model, how do we compete with these types of competitors? And how do we become more agile? How do we become kind of more localized so we really understand kind of local markets and consumer needs? And that obviously has important implications for the type of talent that we need to adopt those new models. I would say another big one that, that's come up is this idea of expectations of the new workforce, right? I mean, what we're hearing from a lot of the companies is, you know, that the new kind of generations that are entering the workforce are placing greater value on things like mobility, diversity of experiences in their careers, this idea of boundaryless careers where they're moving, you know, across different organizations. And so companies are really kind of thinking about how do we respond to these shifting preferences among our workforce while still obviously retaining, you know, programs and practices that appeal to other, you know, demographics of our workforce as well. So it's kind of driving a need for companies to have, I would say, much more kind of flexible practices that can adapt to different employee preferences. And I'd say the last one is certainly this idea of pace of change. I mean, we know that the pace of change is accelerating rapidly. And so this is just, you know, has implications in terms of things like the half-life of employee skills and is driving efforts around new skilling, upskilling, you know, different companies call it different things, but really this need to make sure that we're not just preparing employees for today, but that we're constantly preparing them for what's coming in the future.
Okay, so new competition, new expectations from the workforce, you know, this rapid pace of change, upskilling, et cetera. So those are big trends and issues. So what specifically are some of the companies doing in regards to that with their talent strategies?
You know, one key thing I would say is that we heard, particularly in the working group that we conducted at Microsoft in last March, was really this focus on the employee experience, right? I mean, I know we've heard that in a lot of other realms as well. It's kind of a general focus of HR today. But I think in the talent area, companies are recognizing, again, that so much is changing. There's these diverse preferences. So how do we really kind of hone in and get a laser focus on that employee experience? And that really requires, you know, number one, understanding our employee expectations in the talent space. What do they want from their careers? What type of development are they looking for? You know, how do we give them the mobility that they want? And so we're seeing companies trying to do things like pulse their employees more regularly to really understand those expectations, those preferences, and on the back end to be able to respond to those things much more quickly and much more with much more agility. I would say the second piece of that is also leader accountability. So really kind of holding leaders accountable by having things like talent dashboards, quarterly reviews, where we're looking at different talent metrics and really kind of putting the responsibility on our leaders to make sure that they're delivering on those. Another area that we saw was, I'd say, two themes that seem to be underlying a lot of this kind of shift in talent strategy, I would say, are democratization and transparency, really shifting a lot of this, putting control in the hands of employees. I would say, you know, in the past, when we thought about talent strategy, that was really dictated by the company. The company would say, here's the, you know, where we see your career going. Here's the type of experiences that we think you should have. Here's where we think you should move as you go from role to role. And what they're realizing, again, is that employees want to have more say in that today. And so companies are looking at how do we put, you know, through technology and other tools, how do we put more of that control in employees' hands so that they can, for example, explore different career paths so they can engage in more personalized learning, really to kind of control and provide more variability in where people can go with their careers. Along with that is the idea of transparency to help employees make those choices. They need information. So, for example, putting information in their hands around, here's where we see your skills, you know, their importance in the future. What's going to be the demand for those? What are maybe emerging hot areas that employees should be thinking about so that employees can make informed choices about their careers and their learning? I'd say a third area is really around structure, thinking about how should we even be structuring the talent function in the future. You know, and part of this is, you know, formal, you know, or what some companies call hard structure, right? Really yeah. thinking about the reporting lines, but also soft structure more informally. And I would say on the hard structure, what we're seeing is, at least in some companies, really trying to shift a lot of the talent responsibilities out to the business to make it much more nimble, make it much more flexible, again, much more locally customized. That's not without its challenges. Mm-hmm. That can lead to inconsistencies. It can lead to challenges with talent mobility as we try to move employees across different businesses. And I'll be really curious to see where that goes in the future, because it seems like this centralization, decentralization is always this yo-yo, right, that companies go back and forth on. But right now it seems like the pendulum, you know, has shifted really mm-hmm. to the business, I think, to drive some of that agility. Mm-hmm. I would say also companies are really rethinking or questioning the traditional center of excellence model, right? Does that model still make sense today? What should that model look like? Some companies, for example, in the meetings talked about, you know, they're thinking, should we have centers of excellence around specific, you know, groups, maybe top talent or others, or should we be focusing groups on specific outcomes like the employee experience? So really kind of thinking about what are those, if we have those centers of excellence, what are they really mm-hmm. focused on? And lastly, I would say the big change, you know, which I think has been highlighted in a lot of, you know, what I've already talked about, but is this idea of flexibility, right? Really, the idea of a one-size-fits-all model does not work anymore.
Right.
We know that. Yeah. So the idea across all of these changes is, how do we build in enough flexibility so that we can adapt our practices to different employee expectations, different employee preferences, and make sure that they have that flexibility as they go through their careers.
Okay, great. Just a reminder to send in some questions, because in a few minutes we will turn to your questions as well. But Brad, you know, as you talk about these changes as companies are making them, are there particular tools or technologies that they're leveraging that these companies mentioned?
Yeah, I think we heard you know, a number of companies talk specifically about, you know, technology really kind of supporting and aiding a lot of these changes. I would say to date, as we know, a lot of that has really been focused on the kind of talent acquisition space, where we're using artificial intelligence algorithms to screen, you know, identify and screen candidates. Heard some companies talk about how they're using things like virtual reality simulations mm-hmm. to really try to give candidates realistic previews of the organization and the roles that they would be coming into, as well as, I think, you know, to really try to position some of their companies as being on the cutting edge mm-hmm. of the technology space as well as an attraction tool. I think what we're gonna see over the next several years is really the expansion of these technologies into other parts of the talent space. We're already seeing that already with things like using artificial intelligence for skills inference. So collecting mm-hmm. passive data that we can use to better understand the skills of our employee base. But I think we're likely to see it increasingly used in areas such as coaching, rewards and recognition, feedback. There's a lot of different kind of products coming on the market.
Yeah.
The challenge, I think, in a lot of companies is figuring out which of these add value, you know, which of them should we really be kind of bringing into the fold, as well as thinking about how do we integrate these, you know, different platforms so that we can share data across them and have integrated, you know, solutions.
Yeah.
Right now it
yeah.
seems like it's kind of a mix and match, you know, kind of a hodgepodge,
tag-ons,
mm-hmm. you know, in a lot of different areas.
Yeah. Okay, good. Here's a question. First of all, Christine thanks us for the overview and sees all of these trends coming to life in her organization today. But recognizing the pace of change in the industry is increasingly rapid and we need to adapt quickly, what practical recommendations do you have for large corporations where internal change and operation, you get the word.
Yes.
These strategies, yes, is often slow. So big companies trying to make change like this, where it's slow. Did you see any practical recommendations in the working groups?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, again, part of that, it seems like companies are trying to tackle with the structure piece, right? Really trying to, you know, kind of decentralize a lot of this. I mean, maybe centralizing pieces of it, which are enterprise-wide, you know, things like leadership development, for example, but where you really need programs to be developed and deployed much more quickly. How do we, you know, push more of that out into the field, really being driven by business partners and what they need in collaboration with the COEs or other support functions to be able to develop those. But, you know, to provide that ability to move more quickly to identified, you know, needs within the business. You know, I think what we've seen, you know, didn't come up so much, I would say, in these talent strategy working groups, but we've certainly seen in other working groups and other things that we've done in CARS is the idea of these things like fast action, you know, project teams, right? So, you know, these kind of internal consulting groups that are able to, you know, be deployed very quickly to address, you know, emerging needs, respond to them quickly, bring in resources from these other areas of HR as needed, but using those to really enhance the speed at which we can respond to, you know, some of these different changes that are taking place.
Yeah.
So again, I think we're seeing a lot of it, you know, more structural in terms of how do we create these more flexible ways to organize or tackle the work that allow us to kind of move faster than we might have been able to move in the past.
Yeah, yeah, those fast action teams, you know, I think are becoming much more common. Yeah. You know, another idea from one of the CARS companies that we've mentioned before is this idea of using time, you know, leave time, so filling jobs that are that people are taking medical leave or maternity leave or extended leave with other folks from internal to the organization. Lots of times you want to go external for that kind of stuff, but why not take somebody internally where you're looking to build their skills or upskill or reskill, and you know they already know the internal organization, et cetera, so they're able to launch those into those opportunities pretty quickly. I thought that was a neat strategy we'd heard too. Another question here is, you know, have you seen any trends in how companies are leveraging talent analytics?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the upside is certainly that, you know, given the technologies that companies are deploying, they have much more data than ever before at their fingertips, right? I think the challenges are not new ones. And, you know, they revolve around things like data quality, right? I mean, do we have high quality data? Do we have the right data to be, you know, making decisions? Another challenge is certainly, you know, moving beyond just reporting the news to really thinking about how do we draw out insights and think about how we use this data to actually, you know, drive insights in decision making. And how do we move from retrospective to predictive, right? How do we move from just, again, reporting what we've been doing to really thinking about what we should be doing moving forward? You know, some things that I've seen, you know, companies do to try to tackle some of those challenges, you know, one I think is really to focus, right? To recognize, you know, we're going to have a core set of talent analytics that we can be confident and ensure are accurate, are the right, you know, analytics that we should be using for decision making, and really kind of focus our attention on a limited set instead of trying to, you know, have measure everything,
right?
So really figuring out what should we be measuring and making sure we're doing that really well, but keeping it relatively focused. I think secondly is really developing analytical capability among the, you know, talent function. It's not to mean that, you know, everyone needs to be able to, you know, be using the most advanced statistical software or be conducting network analysis, but to really have enough skill and knowledge to be able to think about, you know, how do I interpret this data? How do I recognize when maybe the data isn't quite right and have an appropriate level of skepticism about what it's telling me? So I think across a lot of the companies we've worked with, we're seeing that as a key area of HR capability building.
And just to know what are the right questions to
ask,
the right
questions to ask on the front end, certainly,
Good, okay. Jose sent in a question here. How are talent management COEs evolving? You mentioned that earlier. What areas are inside talent COEs, for example, assessment, analytics, talent acquisition? Are they gaining or losing emphasis? Did you find out anything there?
Yeah, I would say, assessments was an interesting one because that came up in one of our working groups. And I would say it was kind of split in the room. Some companies were really kind of focusing more attention on really using assessments to understand their talent. They were bringing in more assessments. They were delivering them through different means, survey-based, simulation-based, whereas other companies were really moving away from assessments. They felt like, we should be really trying to collect information about our talent through much more leader-talent intimacy, these more informal communication channels. So, I think we're seeing kind of a mix across companies in terms of how they're prioritizing, assessments. I would say the other areas, not so much kind of are they increasing or decreasing importance. I think what we did see across companies is differences in terms of what goes into the formal talent, COE.
Yeah.
And what's maybe outside. For example, diversity inclusion seemed to be in many cases an area that was outside of the talent COE and often would report directly into the CHRO or sometimes even the CEO, I think, to really signal its importance within the organization and to make sure that it kind of had an independent view maybe beyond some of these other areas. Rewards was an area that it seemed like was mixed again, sometimes was inside, sometimes was outside. Talent acquisition was always inside.
Yeah.
Development was always usually inside.
Yeah.
Performance management was always, inside. Rewards and diversity and inclusion seemed to be the ones that were sometimes kind of outside of the formal talent COE. I would say the other interesting thing that came up, not so much structurally, but in some organizations, they use the kind of talent COE or talent leader label really for just those individuals that were kind of overseeing the broader talent strategy. So you had people that were in talent acquisition, you had people that were in learning and development, let's say. Those people that had the talent label were really, their role was to integrate and to drive strategy across these different areas. So kind of really giving that talent COE a somewhat different role than just kind of being a bundle of these different, practices.
Yeah. And you talked about the shift to maybe COEs being more focused on, say, high potentials or top talent or, things like that. I mean, are they building a COE where they're, kind of assessing and identifying as well as, providing learning and development types of programs, hiring that talent? Is that what we're talking about there?
Yeah, and I think I didn't hear a lot of examples that companies had yet adopted that model. I think they were questioning, should they be, right?
Right.
I mean, does the kind of broader focus, right? If we have learning and development, we're kind of, focused on the entire employee population. I think they were questioning, does that still work? Do we need to be more focused and a bit more segmented in terms of having different units that are focused on different employee populations or different issues around, building leadership capability or driving the employee experience and so forth? And I think back to the first question, some of that was really driven by a desire to be able to move more quickly.
Yeah.
And, if you have groups that are focused on specific issues, presumably they can be more nimble in responding to those.
Okay, great. One more question here. What are the implications of these changes for the capabilities that talent management professionals will need moving forward?
Yeah, so, I mean, one we've talked about, I think, is certainly analytics. That will be a key area going forward. Again, not necessarily building deep expertise in the different methodologies or statistics themselves, but more, as you said, on the front end, how do we ask the right questions? On the back end, how do we interpret the data and make decisions? Some of the other ones that we heard about, certainly consulting skills, the ability to, again, work closely with our business partners to really diagnose issues and to devise solutions. You know, a lot of what we heard also is just this ability to deal with the change and disruption. You know, how do we have people that can manage complexity? How do we have people that can be agile, that can tolerate some risk and some ambiguity as they approach, you know, these different practices? Again, I think to speed up how we're responding to some of these. So what we're seeing, for example, is a lot of organizations, you know, thinking about how do we give our talent professionals diverse experiences, not just within HR, but even outside the business, to build that agility, to build that business mindset, so they have the ability to consult, to develop some of these capabilities.
Okay, great. Another question here from Sean. With baby boomers retiring and that retirement population continuing to grow, what do you see companies doing to work with upcoming retirees to perhaps keep them longer or bring in new talent to help with knowledge transfer?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. Certainly something that came up a lot in our discussions. You know, I think, you know, kind of gave the answer, I think, somewhat in the question, right? But I think, you know, one thing, certainly looking at things like phased retirement, right? How do we, you know, continue to utilize and tap into this talent, maybe on a reduced work schedule, maybe on a, you know, emeritus type position if they're more scientific or technical talent, so that we can have more time for that knowledge transfer, you know, process. I think the other key piece is really that knowledge transfer and how do we make sure that we're kind of capturing their insights and facilitating that both through formal mechanisms, both, you know, technology and kind of capturing and codifying that knowledge, but also more informally. So really kind of sharing it through mentorships and other similar programs. You know, I think one thing that we're seeing a lot of companies adopt as they engage in these new skilling and upskilling efforts is, you know, programs like apprenticeships, right? Where they're bringing employees into these types of roles. And these are not just being used at the lower levels, but even increasingly at, you know, middle levels of the organization, you know, bringing someone in, putting them into more of an apprenticeship type role where they're working with one of these senior experts to really transfer that knowledge, providing the benefit in terms of the knowledge transfer, but also providing the benefit in upskilling someone to take on a new role that they might not have held previously.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think there'll be a lot of new things coming our way that way, not only because of the boomers, but because of the flexibility, et cetera, that all generations seem to want these days. So one last question here in our last minute. Any best practices that companies are using to identify top talent?
Yeah. So, you know, I think, again, assessments seem to be, you know, a prevalent tool in that space. You know, it's been interesting. This is an area that I've kind of tracked. I would say if you looked at it maybe a decade ago, it was a much more kind of informal process. It was largely being driven by managerial nominations, you know, subjective evaluations. And I think for a variety of reasons, one being the recognition of unconscious bias and how it can seep into those processes, companies are looking more at how do we use, in some cases, more formal assessment tools, personality tests, assessment centers, cognitive ability testing, you know, become much more prevalent in that space. I'd say the other one goes back to our analytics discussion, which is increasingly companies are really using analytics to identify talent that might be a good fit for roles within the organization that might not have been previously identified. You know, I've seen companies like IBM and GE and others that actually use now technology to kind of put new people into the candidate pools to one, diversify those pools, and to two, again, identify talent that might have been overlooked in the past. And so I think it's part of that attempt to really democratize, you know, a lot of these different, you know, processes.
Terrific. Well, thanks, Brad, for sharing those insights. I'm sure our viewers got a lot out of that. We want to thank everybody for participating in the webcast today. We will post a copy of this online, and so you can access it at any time, share it with others who might be interested in your organization. And I've got on the slide here just a few of our upcoming events for 2020. We've got several things scheduled, and then we'll be continuing to post more as time goes on. So please head out to our website, cars.ilr.cornell.edu. And again, thanks for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you at a future CARS session.